Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. Coming on the heels of conversations about marriage and the family, which will always be a topic that's near and dear to my own heart, it's one of the driving forces of a lot of the preaching work that I do, especially in covenant theology. Unpacking God's plan for the human person just involves so intrinsically God's plan for marriage and the family. And to that end, then, today, for the first part of the hour, my friend Dr. Gregory Popchak joins us to talk about conflict, a contentious couple's guide to praying through conflict. Arguments are always going to be an inevitable part of any marriage. But when we invite God into our conflicts, He challenges us. He actually compels us to approach them in a different way. And one of the lessons that Greg has taught me over the years, because Greg and Lisa, they've become family to me. They're really like a brother and sister to my bride and I, Stephanie. And the lesson that I've learned in terms of facing conflict is a deeply biblical Catholic one from them. It comes directly from the scriptures and the theology of the body. And that is that in conflict, the most important position both sides have to have, the bride and bridegroom have to have when they're looking at each other, is what is the good intention that this person is trying to meet in this conflict? Because there really is. If we can presume the good intentionality of the other, we can understand that while we might be coming at it from differing viewpoints, differing stances, in fact, frankly, differing conclusions, we can always agree that both want the good of the marriage. Or at least we ought to operate with that assumption and move forward. And so Greg is going to share with us different techniques of praying through conflict so that we can always arrive at conflict being an opportunity for growth and healing and deeper love and intimacy. After that, I want to talk with you about the history of Shrove Tuesday, Mardi Gras, and Carnival, that they are deeply Catholic roots and Catholic traditions that have been co-opted by a perverse anti-Christian culture, but that we can reclaim it and how to do that. To that end, go on AveMariaRadio.net and sign up for my Lenten Mission daily 2-minute videos that you will receive for free, and download my free ebook. It's a Lenten book to dive deeper into Lent. All this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus, and good afternoon, everybody. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, February 17th. It's the Feast of the Founders of the Order of Servites. Today's news is brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need at visitingangels.com. Civil rights icon and 2-time Democratic presidential candidate Reverend Jesse Jackson is dead at the age of 84. His family announced his passing overnight. Reverend Jackson gained notoriety when he worked closely alongside Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. during the Civil Rights Movement. While no exact cause of death was announced, Jackson had been suffering from a rare neurodegenerative disorder. Turns out that DNA found during the search for Nancy Guthrie does not match any of the records in the FBI's national database. Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos said today that both the DNA found on a glove and the DNA recovered from her home did not result in any hits. The update comes as the search for the 84-year-old mother of Today's Show host co-anchor Savannah Guthrie enters its third week in southern Arizona. U.S. and Iranian officials are holding nuclear talks in Switzerland today, as President Trump holds the threat of military force over Tehran to make a deal. The talks, mediated by Oman, will include U.S. envoy Steve Nitkoff and Jared Kushner. Washington wants Iran to give up all uranium enrichment and make reductions to its missile stockpile. A federal judge is ordering the restoration of a slavery exhibit removed from a historical site in Philadelphia after the Trump administration found it disparaging. Last month, the National Park Service started removing the President House exhibit near an Independence Hall showing where George Washington lived when Philadelphia was the nation's first capital, honoring the slaves who worked here. And the Supreme Court is giving high-tech help to the justices to decide when to recuse themselves from a case. The High Court unveiled new software today that requires lawyers to provide the stock ticker symbols of all companies involved in their cases to aid in the new checks. With your Ave Maria Radio News, this is Brian Shanley.
afternoon and welcome back.
I'm Marcus Peter. Arguments are an inevitable part of any marriage, but when we invite God into our conflicts, he challenges us to approach them in a different way, to approach them better. We're joined by Dr. Greg Popchak, founder and director of CatholicCounselors.com, as well as the host with his bride Lisa of More to Life, that is carried on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and produced here at Ave Maria Radio. Greg, great to speak with you again. How are you?
I'm doing well, Marcus. Great to be here.
So, conflicts amongst couples. Now, if there is a perfect couple out there that never has conflicts, I'd love to meet them. But given that the rest of us endure this, teach us, just share with us some of the biblical disciplines of how to fight rightly.
Well, you know, we were talking about this on More to Life, that you know, we often think of conflict as a sign that something is broken. But we like to think of it as an invitation from God to heal the damage that sin has done to our relationships. And, you know, if we take up that invitation and work together with God's grace, we can grow closer to each other because of those conflicts as we respond to them. And I think the first thing that we need to keep in mind is that, you know, usually where arguments go wrong and conflict really bears bad fruit is when we think of anger as a call to action instead of a call to prayer. You know, so you do something that upsets me, and so if I get angry at that and I just let loose with my anger, I'm seeing my anger as a call to action. It's just a reaction to what you did that upset me. But if you do something and I feel angry about that, the first thing I really need to do is bring that to God and say, okay, Lord, you know, Marcus really upset me. And I don't know what to do about that. Help me to know how to respond to him in a way that helps me be my best, that helps me work for his good and for the good of our relationship. So we start there, right? And then I can come to you once I've maybe thought through things a little bit and say, you know, Marcus, when you did that, it really upset me, or I was really hurt by it. You know, I'd like to talk through this and figure out how we can handle it better in the future, right? So there again, we're looking at the distinction that psychologists, in particular John Gottman, makes between a complaint and a criticism. So a complaint is what I just did, where I say, you know, Marcus, when you did that, it really hurt my feelings. I'd like to figure out how we could work together to handle that better in the future. A criticism is where I'm just reacting in anger, like, Marcus, I can't believe you jerk did that to me, and how terrible, and how you're awful, and, you know, you should go pound salt. Right? So the difference, you know, the difference there is that when it's with a complaint, I'm identifying the problem, and I'm asking you to help me with it. Even if you're the one who hurt me, right? I'm presuming that that's not your intention and that we can work together through this. With a criticism, you're the problem. And I'm attacking you. And so you're going to get defensive and we're going to start feeding off of each other at that point. But there's one other thing I'd like to introduce for Christians, right? And for Christian couples in particular. Several years ago, psychologist Eli Finkel did a TED Talk called The Marriage Hack. And he talked about a study that they did at Northwestern University that asked couples to have a difficult conversation. And they divided the couples up into two groups. So the control group, they didn't do anything with. They just said, go have a difficult conversation. Have fun. And the experimental group, though, they said, before you have that difficult conversation, we want you both to take a second and imagine somebody that loves you both and wants the best for both of you. How would that person want you to handle this conversation? And then they sent those couples off to have the difficult discussion. What they found was the couples who thought about that person who loved them both and wanted the best for both of them not only did better in that experimental discussion, they continued to see improvements in their marriage for up to a year after the original study.
Wow.
Whereas the control group did not handle those discussions any better and, in fact, started to see their relationships decrease in satisfaction over the course of that year. The thing is, for Christians, we don't have to imagine somebody who loves us both and wants the best for both of us. We have a relationship with that person.
Right.
And so we need to bring those conversations to God. So before we have, as I'm starting the conversation with you or my wife or whoever, you know, assuming that they're open to it, the first thing we need to do is say, okay, Lord, you know, I know what I want, and Marcus knows what he wants, but help us to figure out what you want, and help us to take care of each other while we work to do that. And right, and that's what we really encourage couples at CatholicCounselors.com to do when they're facing serious conversations. To start by saying, all right, you know, I know where I'm at, and, you know, they know where they're at, but help us to work together to figure out what you want from us, Lord, and help us to take care of each other while we do that. And that really recenters our hearts and minds on the idea that we're working together to solve the problem. We're not the problem.
Right. And because of that, all of a sudden your team working on the issue and actually turning to God for grace, as opposed to trying to correct the other for the sake of remediating the issue?
Well, sure. And you know what? Even if the other person did something hurtful, mm-hmm. we can still work together on that. Because right. the presumption here is that you didn't want to hurt me. Right, you were trying to express a need or an intention, and you didn't do it the best way. And if you had to do it over again, you'd like to do it better. So I'm assuming that about you. You're assuming that about you. Mm-hmm. So we can work together against the problem, which is you didn't know how to express that need or concern in a way that I could hear it in that moment. So we're able to not just focus on what happened and who did what to whom, but really concentrate on the next time something like this occurs again, how could we handle it better? And I think there's one other thing I want to throw out here, which is that nobody ever agrees on what really happened.
Mm.
And it's kind of pointless to argue about that. So even the happiest, most loving couples in the world never really agree on who said what or who started it or how did it get going. What we can both agree on, though, is that we didn't like how it went down.
Right.
And so we're going to so instead of re-arguing what happened back then, we're going to focus on when something similar to this happens in the future. How can we work better together next time? So we're not ignoring it. We're not just saying, well, we can't talk about the past. What we're doing is we're using the past as a way of framing future events and working out together how we want to handle those situations differently. And if we can root that, especially in the prayer that I suggested at the beginning of this, where we can go to God and say, all right, Lord, you know, I know what I want, and they know what they want, but help us to figure out what you want and help us to take care of each other while we do that. Now we've got a real system for managing conflict that doesn't drive a wedge between us, but actually invites healing grace into the relationship.
And you've talked about these methods before. I mean, I hear Lisa and you teach this on your program, but you have at least two books that address these particular methods of approaching conflict as mm-hmm. a couple.
That's right. For Better Forever, A Catholic Guide to Lifelong Marriage is our book that really reviews the Catholic difference in marriage and how couples can really enjoy the benefits that Catholic marriage can give them in every area, from their prayer lives to conflict management to their physical relationship. And then our other book, How to Heal Your Marriage and Nurture Lasting Love, which is really all about working through difficulties and handling challenges more effectively as a couple. And we go into much more detail in both of those books about this whole process that I described to you. Actually, we also talk about it in Praying For and With Your Spouse, which is a book that really talks about how to bring God into every part of our relationship and so that we can have that, as the scripture calls it, the three-ply cord that is not easily broken between my wife, and God.
And I love that you mentioned that, because these are some of the things you also talk about on the Catholic HOM app. So just tell us about the app and how couples can find resources for handling conflict on it.
Sure, thank you. In fact, so every week on Catholic Home, and it's spelled HOM, it stands for Households on Mission. And every week on the Catholic Home app, we host deeper dive discussions that focus on different topics related to marriage and family life. And this week, we're having a conversation on handling family conflict. And we're talking about two things. You know, most of the places that we learn as adults how to handle conflict comes from the way we were disciplined as children. Because the way we were disciplined as kids teaches us how to deal with offenses. And most of us didn't really learn good habits there. And so this week on Catholic Home, we're having a discussion about what we call discipleship discipline, which is a gentle approach to conflict and correction, but that as adults becomes what we like to call CPR, compassionate problem resolution. And so the same steps for correcting kids become the same steps that we can use in navigating difficulties between husbands and wives and other relationships as well. And so on Catholic Home this week, in our deeper dive discussion, we're talking about how to employ both of those models, whether in parenting or in marriage, so that we don't have to be afraid of conflict driving a wedge in the heart of our families,
right.
but can see conflict as that invitation to grow closer to God and to each other.
Greg, always a joy. And I'll be very honest, these particular resources that you've put out in the past have been very helpful to my bride and I, so thank you.
Thank you, Marcus. It's a pleasure to hear that, and thank you for having me on today.
My guest has been Dr. Greg Popcheck, founder and director of CatholicCounselors.com. He and his bride, Lisa, host More to Life on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and the Catholic HOM app. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
This program is brought to you by the following nonprofit underwriter.
Are you longing to hear God's voice?
Lord, Teach Me to Pray, the free Ignatian prayer series will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking, and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord, Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord, Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization. Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Mardi Gras is upon us. Today is Shrove Tuesday. Today is the day before Ash Wednesday. I'm going to begin by suggesting that if you want to take advantage of the season of Lent, go to avemariaradio.net, click on the slider, and sign up for my daily Lenten mission. It's a series of free two-minute videos that help you dive into the season of Lent. I also want to offer you a free copy of my recently published ebook, Lavished in Love. On that same slider, you get to download it for free for a short amount of time. I'll tell you a little about that later. I want to talk about Shrove Tuesday or Mardi Gras. It's without the Catholic context, it would appear that Mardi Gras, Shrove Tuesday, Carnival, they're treated like a civic right to behave immorally. And plenty of Catholics I know wait for a kind of dying down of the celebration so that Ash Wednesday will come along and disinfect the social sphere all over again, and then we can begin with the work of being holy. The problem is that this modern perversion of Mardi Gras and Carnival actually has a catechetical and liturgical root that I want us to take advantage of, because this confusion socially can grow when people start thinking that Catholics, especially within the Church, celebrates immoral excess. The truth is, the older Catholic instinct was aimed at a kind of noble finishing of the season of ordinary eating and even settling accounts with your neighbor, with your conscience, so that you can enter Lent with a cleansed pantry, but also a cleansed conscience. So let's begin with the name. The language of the name actually has memory to it. Mardi Gras in French literally means Fat Tuesday. It was the last day before the fast begins on Ash Wednesday. Why? Because on that day you were expected to finish your fatty foods, the foods that were considered luxurious, the foods that were considered things to be eaten during a feast to be enjoyed. Carnival also gets explained away as a kind of shrug for debauchery today, but Carnaval, carne vale, quite frankly meant say goodbye to meat or farewell to meat. So even those two phrases, Mardi Gras and Carnaval, have very deeply Catholic roots in them. But I want to go beyond just the names to the significance of the celebrations. What these names and these celebrations signify is that for the Catholic Church, for the Christian biblical anthropology, the body matters, food matters, feasting is a good thing, Discipline also matters, though. And we need to have governance over our desires. Ungoverned desires eventually governs the man. And that's why the older Catholic world placed feasting beside fasting in a kind of deliberate rhythm. You went through seasons of fasting, and then you went through proportionate seasons of feasting, and vice versa. And that's why the day, for it to exist at all, was a kind of hinge. You close one door in one season, you open one door to another season, and you keep going through this cycle. And in doing so, you enter into the life of Christ himself. That's why we look at Shrove Tuesday. The word sounds like a dusty old English word from a parish register. And to be fair, we no longer use the term anymore. The word shrove comes from the idea of being shriven. It means that interiorly you want to confess, you want to seek absolution, and therefore we have Mardi Gras, we have Carnival on this Tuesday. But it's also a Shrove Tuesday, because on this day, historically and even today, we are meant to engage in self-examination, in repentance, in setting our spiritual house in order to enter Lent and go into wilderness with Christ over the next 40 days. And that's why, going back to the concept of rich food, pancakes, rich foods, they all serve a kind of purpose. They serve a significant purpose, a practical purpose. Households used to use up their eggs, their butter, their fats, because these would sit unused during the entire season of Lent, simply because of the daily strictness of the fast. But that practicality was an overflow of the spiritual logic. And in that setting then, something as innocuous as a pancake became less trendy, a brunch aesthetic, and more kind of humble recognition that the family as a unit was denying itself together. Now, today, we are in such excess and affluence that we take it for granted. But the family, back in the days when such affluence didn't exist, used to pray that denial of these fats and these oils and even the sweetness of the food, denying all that would produce joy in the soul, not crankiness. That's why the church's genius has always involved taking what is human and training it toward God, including the appetite for food. St. John Chrysostom, he talks about how the church is medicinal in that fact, because he describes it as a hospital for souls where the burdened find rest and the troubled find relief. The church exists to grant remission of sins and to school the heart in thanksgiving of the Lord our God. And that's why a proper celebration of Fat Tuesday is not permission to do whatever you want, whenever you want, however you want. It is not license to descend into the swamp of licentious and promiscuous behavior. The whole point of the day is gratitude. God, you've blessed us with so much over this past year. Thank you. And now we're getting ready to enter into the wilderness with you. Prepare our hearts accordingly. And that's why even things like sugar is basically cast out of the house for the entire Lenten season. Now, at this point, if you take a look at the scriptures, the Hebrew roots of things like fasting and feasting bring this whole concept into a sharper focus. Israel's entire life with God moved through these appointed times. They alternated between celebration and affliction of the soul. In Leviticus 23, the feasts of the Lord structured the year with things like holy convocations. And that's why time entered into the life of the covenant. Time didn't just progress in a mundane or chaotic order. God trained his people through seasons, not through sporadic spiritual moods. Yom Kippur carried the command to afflict ourselves. And that tradition has consistently associated the covenant people with fasting and penitence. But that penitential day exists within the calendar, filled with feasts, including Passover and weeks and booths. And that's why covenant life never consisted of one emotional register. God forms his people through a rhythm that includes rejoicing before him, but also bowing low before him. And that keeps our hearts from confusing our identity with him. Yes, he is intimate to us and our beloved, but at the same time, we must never forget he is truly Lord and he is owed all our reverence. And that's why scripture doesn't allow us to create caricatures of our fasting. In Deuteronomy 8, Israel learns that man lives by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Our appetite, physically, becomes a kind of training ground for us to spiritually prepare for the Word of God to live into our hearts. And that's why Carnival, Mardi Gras, and Shrove Tuesday make sense only inside this biblical pattern. It belongs to a covenant people who understands that the Lord forms us, even in times of feasting, through holy times, holy seasons, holy meals, and also holy restraint. And the New Testament intensifies that pattern. Christ tells us to fast, but he also gives us the permission to feast. Christ himself fasts in the wilderness as Israel's faithful son, and he answers temptations with the scriptures. And so the season of Lent is an annual training ground for you and I to be united to Christ in that time in the wilderness in fasting. And that's why Fat Tuesday, rightly understood, is the threshold where Christians enter that ground with God. And that's why, with that in mind, once again, I want to encourage you to join me on a simple daily practice. Go onto AveMariaRadio.net, click on the slider, sign up for my daily Lenten mission. It's a series of free 2-minute videos produced together with Ignatius Press and the Catholic Study Bible app. And each one is designed to help you meditate on the day's lessons for Lent to make you more courageous in soul. I also want to place in your hands a free copy of my ebook, Lavished in Love. The print book is also available. So it's a day-by-day meditation for the season of Lent, published by En Route Media, because many of us might desire just a little bit to go deeper. Sign up for the video mission. It'll be delivered directly to you, daily 2 minutes. It is bite-sized and doable. Or procure a copy of my free ebook and dive even deeper. My encouragement to you is treat this Fat Tuesday with sane gratitude. Measure your joy, have a covenantal mind, and step across the threshold of the wilderness with Christ our Lord and Savior. Let's set our eyes on Christ and journey with him through the wilderness to Jerusalem, to Calvary, and ultimately to his resurrection in our great work of salvation. Stay tuned, I'm Marcus Peter.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
The devil will always do his best to tempt you into sin until you get to that place where you love sin. That's what he wants. He wants you down there with him. And not because he loves you, he hates you. When you do what the enemy tempts you to do, he does it out of pure hatred.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What is catechesis and why do we care? The job of catechesis is to reveal all the joy as well as the demands of the way of Christ, says the Catholic Catechism. The way of Christ is summed up in the catechesis of the Beatitudes. Jesus gave us the 8 Beatitudes in his Sermon on the Mount. The Catholic Catechism tells us this teaching is the only path that leads to the eternal beatitude, happiness, for which the human heart longs. The catechesis of sin and forgiveness challenges us. Unless man acknowledges that he is a sinner, states the Catechism, he cannot know the truth about himself, which is a condition for acting justly, and without the offer of forgiveness, man could not bear the truth. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. It's no news by now that Jimmy Lai, activist for free speech and freedom of religions in Hong Kong, has been condemned, effectively convicted, to 20 years in prison. Joining me to talk about this is Benedict Rogers, human rights activist and writer, specializing in Asia, co-founder and chief executive officer of Hong Kong Watch. He wears numerous hats, and he also had the great privilege of working alongside Lai for a number of years. Benedict, great to speak with you again. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to be with you.
I want to just give you the floor here to be able to express your thoughts and your undoubtedly your dismay about the conviction of Jimmy Lai.
Absolutely. It is the most severe sentence that anyone in Hong Kong has received, and there have been a lot of people who've already been sentenced in Hong Kong. And even by mainland Chinese standards, it's a very draconian sentence, 20 years. Mm-hmm. It was not, I have to say, a surprise. We were expecting a harsh sentence, something of this kind. But nevertheless, it, of course, is extremely sad. And it, essentially, it is not a 20-year sentence, but a life sentence, or even arguably a death sentence, because at 78 years old mm-hmm. and in declining health, unless there is an urgent intervention to seek his release, Jimmy Lai is likely now to die in prison.
I said the exact same thing the moment I found out about his conviction. I did a commentary on video, and that's still being produced right now. But I immediately said this was a deliberate death sentence. The point of this was to make an example of him and to make sure that he would die in prison. And that's exactly what we're going to see.
That's correct. I mean, I still think that there is a possibility, I don't know how big or small that is, but a possibility if there is enough sustained international pressure by my government in the United Kingdom, bearing in mind that Jimmy Lai is a British citizen, but also by the United States with President Trump's forthcoming visit to China expected in April, and other governments. If those governments put enough pressure on China to say, okay, you've now made an example of Jimmy Lai, now release him on humanitarian grounds, on medical grounds, that's not an impossibility, and that's certainly what we should be trying for.
I couldn't agree more. Ever since I heard about the conviction, the first thing perhaps that I've been trying to push forth is avenues that we can see for appeal on either humanitarian grounds or, like you mentioned, even medical grounds. So tell us about the background of this, because the truth is, Jimmy has been suffering in a lot of ways, but including medically.
Well, that's right. So he's been already in prison, mostly in solitary confinement, for the last 5 years. And during that time, I mean, he went into prison in 2020. I last saw him in person, I think, in 2019, although I saw him online in 2020 before his arrest. And he was in reasonably good health for someone in his early 70s. But what's happened in the last 5 years is he's had a dramatic weight loss. He is a diabetic, and that's an issue. He has a heart condition that's developed whilst in prison. According to those closer to him, his teeth are rotting, his fingernails are rotting. And he's been kept in a prison cell with no natural sunlight, actually being denied natural light, and only permitted less than 1 hour a day for exercise in a confined space. He's also, of course, been denied independent medical treatment and denied the right to receive, as a Catholic, the sacrament of the Eucharist. So the conditions he's been in for the last 5 years have been dire, and all accounts point to a much poorer health now than what he had when he went in.
The other issue that we've seen is, like you've mentioned, poor health to begin with, is that we know from evidence that the Hong Kong administration has not seen to it that he is provided with adequate and therefore truly humane medical care.
That's correct. I mean, he should have been able to receive both adequate medical care, but also independent medical mm-hmm. care of his choice. And instead, I don't know exactly what medical care he has received, but certainly it's been in prison conditions on the authorities' terms.
Tell us about the violation of his conscience as well, the affront, if you will, in terms of his religious beliefs.
Well, Jimmy is a devout Catholic. He converted in 1997, a few days after the handover of Hong Kong, and his faith has always been absolutely central to everything else that he does in terms of defending freedom of expression as well as freedom of conscience and freedom of religion. In prison, he has, by the accounts I've heard, been able to spend a lot of time reading great theological and spiritual texts, a lot of time in prayer, but where his freedom of religion and conscience has been violated is that for some time now he's been denied the right to receive the sacrament of the Eucharist. For a short time in the early part of his time in prison, he was receiving visits from Cardinal Wren, the courageous Hong Kong cardinal, but I believe for some time now he has been denied the right to receive the Holy Communion.
And of course, all of this is deliberate. He's being made an example of. But the other thing for us to understand very clearly is that the administration of the CCP has zero care for the freedom of religion and the primacy of one's conscience in standing before one's discernment of God.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the CCP has been conducting an all-out assault on religion broadly and Christianity in particular across mainland China, resulting in closure of unregistered churches, indeed the destruction of some churches, arrests of lots of both Protestant and Catholic clergy. And we're seeing that beginning to appear, not quite in those terms, but we're seeing that nevertheless the hostility towards freedom of religion appear in Hong Kong. And Jimmy is a prime example of that, as really the most prominent lay Catholic in Hong Kong.
What are we seeing in terms of the effect of Lai's work, though? Is the cause of true republican democracy, elected government, freedom of speech, and free enterprise dead in Hong Kong?
It's dead in practice, although I believe it's alive in people's hearts. So I don't believe Hong Kong people have given up the spirit of those values, but they're no longer able to exercise them. So yes, all of the basic freedoms that were promised to Hong Kong under the terms of the city's handover to China have been completely dismantled and trampled on.
We need to be clear here that based on the history of, you know, the administration of Hong Kong before it was handed off to the CCP, promises were made pertaining to what we might classically consider Western ideals, but really free market principles and dignity of the human person in the public sphere, and freedom of speech. All of these were part of the conditions of the relinquishing of Hong Kong back to independent administration.
That's exactly right. An international treaty was signed by my country, the United Kingdom, and China. It's known as the Sino-British Joint Declaration. It's a treaty registered at the United Nations. And in that treaty, China promised to uphold Hong Kong's high degree of autonomy, basic freedoms, the rule of law, the free market, for at least 50 years from the time of the handover. So that should have taken us at least to 2047. And halfway through that period, they completely dismantled and broke those promises.
We, like you mentioned, the breaking of these promises mean that the future of Hong Kong is tenuous at best, and we're really seeing that despite its initial flourishing, a draconian application, for want of a better expression, of the kind of administration we're seeing in mainland China. I'm talking with Ben Rogers. He is a prolific author, particularly of the China Nexus, 30 years in and around the Chinese Communist Party's tyranny. He worked closely with Jimmy Lai, which is the reason he's joining us today to share with us about what's happening with Jimmy Lai, what we can understand about China, and the grander conversation of Hong Kong. Stay tuned, I'm Marcus Peter.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Hello, friends. Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers here, and I haven't been this excited about an up-and-coming speaker for a long time, Dr. Marcus Peter. Dr. Peter has the gift of combining deep theological insight, wisdom, and knowledge with personal testimony and story in a way that makes the power of the church's teaching and God's love felt deeply in the heart of all who hear him. If you are looking for someone for your next conference, parish mission, or event, look no further than Dr. Marcus Peter.
Visit MarcusBPeter.com to book Dr. Marcus Peter to speak at your event. At the Ave Maria website, you can continue the discussion and education through the Ave Maria Radio's links to social media. Ave Maria Radio has accounts on Facebook, X, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the social media symbols at the top of your screen.
In her diary, St. Faustina wrote, "If only I had a spiritual director from the beginning, I would not have wasted so many of God's graces." If even the saints needed spiritual guidance, how much more do we? The nonprofit Revive app lets you meet virtually with certified spiritual companions, scheduling sessions at your convenience, helping you grow closer to Christ. Your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3. This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Father Benedict Rochelle.
I must tell you that from what I observe from very young people, all of these blasphemers, all of these mockers are in for a tough time. Because the devil bites his own tail. And I find among young people a growing reverence and longing for God. I find a decline in the cynicism and skepticism around, because it had to destroy itself. No one can live on being an enemy of God. It's too crazy. It's too absurd. It's too dark. It's too bleak. God is beautiful. God is holy. Why in the world mock God?
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi. I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm talking with Ben Rogers, author of The China Nexus, 30 Years in and Around the Chinese Communist Party's Tyranny. Ben has also had the privilege of working very closely with Jimmy Lai, whom we're talking about today. Ben, just to draw back to a more broad version of the conversation, what's happening with Jimmy, especially with the re-annexing of Hong Kong back under China's mainland administration, shouldn't surprise us in a lot of senses. If anything, I think many of us saw it coming.
Yes, I think that's right. I think in the early years after the handover, and I lived in Hong Kong during those years from 1997 to 2002, in those first 5 years, China, I would say, did, at least on the surface, keep its promises. I worked as a journalist there, and I was able to write and publish articles in Hong Kong then that, if I wrote them today, would if I was in Hong Kong, would get me arrested, and certainly they would never be published. But after those first early years, maybe the first decade or so, really they began to gradually and then very rapidly dismantle Hong Kong's freedoms and introduce a very draconian, repressive set of laws that have created a climate of real fear and repression in Hong Kong.
Tell us about the reality of religious freedom, and I want to present a context here. Here in the West, especially in the United States, we take for granted those constitutional rights that allow us to even lament about those rights. But the fact is, in most of the East, especially in that region, China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, you cannot presuppose that you have freedom of religion and freedom of conscience and therefore freedom of speech.
That's entirely right. We see it in mainland China in its most brutal and starkest form, where we have seen many churches, both Protestant and Catholic, being either forced to close or, in some cases, the crosses torn down or being dynamited, clergy being arrested. The state-controlled churches in mainland China, and keep in mind there are, of course, the underground churches that are outside the state system, but there are state-approved churches. And in those churches, they are forced to display portraits of Xi Jinping and Chinese Communist Party propaganda banners. So that's what's happening in mainland China, and I fear that's long-term the destiny for Hong Kong as well. In Hong Kong, you could arguably say that freedom of worship is still there. People can still go to churches or to other places of worship. But increasingly, clergy are self-censoring themselves because if they preach on certain topics, they could find themselves in trouble. Faith-based schools, which are a large part of the education system, are being compromised. And Christians in public life in Hong Kong are just much, much more careful. So freedom of religion is absolutely under fire, albeit in perhaps somewhat more subtle and insidious ways than the much more blatant ways that we see in mainland China.
The other issue pertaining to everything you've just shared is, unlike most civilized nations where we can have bilateral or even international communication, especially when there are potential affronts to human rights, China isn't one of those nations that's open to such conversations. And so this draconian conviction of Jimmy Lai is going to be a unilateral enforcement of CCP principles.
Yes, absolutely. China does not listen to reason or to appeals alone. What I think they do listen to and somewhat respect and even respond to is strength. So I think if we if our governments really put pressure on Beijing, particularly with President Trump's expected visit to China in April, that and other visits need to be need to include both appeals for Jimmy Lai's release on humanitarian grounds, but also whatever leverage we can use, and really putting pressure on the Chinese and Hong Kong authorities to release him.
I want to ask you to also speak to, therefore, any avenue of hope that the family might have. What do we know they've been saying? What's been their experience through all this?
Well, his son and daughter are both now outside Hong Kong, and they have been very courageously, publicly leading the global campaign for their father. And they've been remarkable. I mean, on the day that Jimmy was sentenced to 20 years in prison, I saw both of them, and particularly Sebastian, his son, doing round after round of media interviews, being remarkably composed and calm. But of course, they're devastated at the thought that their father has this prison sentence. They do convey some hope, which is that Jimmy is this remarkably courageous person who stays true to both his values, but also to his, most importantly, his faith. And they say it is his Catholic faith that is sustaining him in prison. The authorities have imprisoned his body, but they haven't imprisoned his spirit. And I think that gives the family and his friends hope. And we hope that that will be a message that will mobilize the international community to really seek his release.
As we pray for Jimmy Lai, one of the issues that many listeners are concerned about is whether we can do something, whether there can be a kind of writing campaign, or whether some policy decisions or document decisions might be influenced by listeners right now.
Absolutely. I would encourage listeners, firstly, to write to their elected officials, representatives, congressmen, senators, particularly to urge the U.S. Congress to appeal to the Trump administration to really use the forthcoming visit by the president to prioritize Jimmy's release. President Trump has several times singled out Jimmy's case and said he's concerned about it and he will seek his release. So we must hold him to that promise, and he should use that visit to do so. But I also think that particularly Catholics have a really important role to play in supporting Jimmy, firstly through prayer. I myself am going to devote much of Lent to fasting and praying for Jimmy, as well as for other causes that I care about. And listeners could also appeal to their parish priests, to their bishops and cardinals, to mobilize the church worldwide to speak out about Jimmy, to hold vigils, to pray for him in Mass, and most of all, to urge the Vatican and the Holy Father to be much more vocal and to speak out for Jimmy's release.
I want to ask you to also drill in on that, the fact that we ought to be writing to our elected representatives to make sure that this is a topic that's very near and dear to our hearts, and therefore it really does pertain to the concerns of us who live in the United States.
Absolutely. I think, in our democracies like the United States and my own country, elected officials respond to what their constituents are telling them, and so listeners can certainly and should certainly engage their elected members of the House of Representatives and the Senate to deliver this message.
To step back a little, too, as we consider what we in the United States and most of the West can do, but this program is listened to internationally as well, Ben. The issue we can have, like I mentioned at the beginning of the first segment, is to still try to think of China and Hong Kong and most of the East under the same intellectual categories that we hold the West. Can you please help us break that paradigm?
Well, yes. I mean, China is under a brutal regime that is not only repressing its own people, but actually is an increasing threat to the rest of the world. It is a regime that is supporting other dictatorships in other parts of the world, fueling repression, and also increasingly pursuing a campaign of what's known as transnational repression, so going after critics, diaspora communities, even foreign critics like myself, in Western democracies. So China is not a sort of distant country on the other side of the world. Its tentacles are intertwined with the global economy and with our own societies. And we need to wake up to that fact and stand up to it.
As a final exhortation, like you mentioned, to stand up to it here in the United States, lest we find ourselves in similar situations, what can we do? Or at least here in the West, what can we do to make sure we're upholding those Judeo-Christian frameworks that allow for our liberty and human flourishing?
Well, we should be doing everything possible to defend our values of freedom and democracy. That includes academic freedom in our universities, religious freedom. And we should be urging our governments to reduce dependency on China, diversify, for example, our supply chains so that we're not dependent on China economically. Reduce China's influence in critical national infrastructure and in other key sectors of the economy where their influence can be dangerous. Those are some of the things we should be doing.
Ben, I want to say thank you very, very much for making the time to speak with us about something I know that's near and dear to your heart, but also causes immense sadness. How can people follow your work?
Well, thank you very much. The easiest way they could follow me is on X. And my X account is just Benedict Rogers, so they can find me there, and then they can find the various organizations that I'm involved with through that.
Well, thank you very much, Ben. Greatly honored to have you speak with us and make the time to talk with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
My guest has been Benedict Rogers, a human rights activist and writer specializing in Asia. Ben has also worked with Jimmy Lai, which is the reason he made the time to speak with us right now. Jimmy Lai, the Hong Kong activist, founder of Apple Daily, and a proponent of free speech and freedom of religion in Hong Kong, has recently been convicted to 20 years in prison. Ostensibly, he's going to die in prison unless a miracle allows him to see freedom. Let's pray for him and see how we can get involved. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.